Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, Chief, you know, there's two things in this world I hate to miss. One's a Lakers game and the other's Rich Rossi Live. You gotta be cuckoo to miss this show, you know what I mean, pal? And wait till you get a load of what Rich is gonna talk about today.
Today we're gonna talk with Josie Pollock. And I'm so thrilled that my dear friend Josie has her memoirs out now, just hit Amazon, Backstage, Path to Heaven. And we'll be back in about 25 seconds to hear her exciting story. She hung out with a lot of celebrities, Freddie Mercury, John Lennon, Michael Jackson, Cher, Elton John, Clint Eastwood, Prince Charles, Liberace, Engelbert Humperdinck, Tom Jones. She had a close call. She should have been at Sharon Tate's home on August 8th, 1969, but she had a migraine and missed that. Toured with her husband, magician Channing Pollock, as his assistant. They opened up for Liberace, were on the Ed Sullivan Show a few times. And she was engaged to Nigel Olsen. He was the drummer for Elton John. Well, we'll touch on all this stuff. And then she became a chaplain, ministering to many celebrities in jail, the Menendez brothers, Tommy Lee, different ones, Robert Downey Jr. And she's had a fascinating journey. We'll be back with her to talk about how she went from the hula hoop queen to a chaplain in L.A. County Jail and beyond. So we'll be back in 20 seconds with Josie Pollock about her new memoir. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and welcome, Josie Pollock. How are you?
Hello, Richard. Well, you know, I feel like I went through a 40-year pregnancy and just gave birth when my book came out.
Yes, well, I know we have been anxiously awaiting it for a long time and praying and encouraging and trying to let people know to keep you in prayer for this project, because your memoirs is quite an accomplishment. You've lived a life, you've lived one of those lives where probably a reporter or an interviewer is like, oh my God, where do I start? You know, I mean, a lot of people, they have one or two interesting things, but your whole life has had so many interesting twists and turns. You started off, your book says, my life began in the East End of London, you know, and this was kind of
working. That's where I was born.
Yeah, what was your childhood like? This was, you know, you saw the devastation of World War II over there, didn't you?
Well, yeah, that was my childhood. I slept many nights in air raid shelters and was evacuated into the country. We had to leave London because of the bombing. And I was one of those lucky kids because most were evacuated without their parents. But my dad stayed in London, and my mom, and my grandma, and my baby sister, and an aunt, we all were together in Cornwall.
Yeah, and you write in your book about seeing the planes going overhead. And
oh, yes. One night, as I was going into the air raid shelter, I looked up, and I could see tracer bullets going from one plane to another. And there were four steps into the shelter, and I took one, fortunately landing on a bed.
Mm.
And when I went to see the film recently about World War II, there was a scene in it which was just like I had seen when I was a little child.
One of the themes of your life, and there's many reasons I like you is, and I'm so grateful for your friendship, and we have a lot of parallels with the entertainment connection and being ministers. And but one of the other things I really like about you is you see through the religious junk of the people that misrepresent God, and you know it's God's love is the important thing. And you write about that theme even as a child. You stayed with a religious woman, and she took you to church, but you saw hypocrisy there. I mean, even as a child, you could see through the religious hypocrisy.
No, God gave me the eyes to see through it. And actually, the first words that God ever spoke to me, I'd gotten to a Bible study where the teacher was putting down a Christian leader. And I just said to God, how can we ever save the world if we can't get along amongst each other? And God spoke to me for the first time and said, listen to all of my teachers, and I will give you the wisdom of discernment. Now, I knew it wasn't me because I didn't speak that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because my sister's visiting from England, and there's a church opened across the street, which I just love. And she said to me, she said, this is the only church I really feel comfortable in because the pastor is not about money and power.
Mm. Wow, that's powerful.
You know, for her, she's not a churchgoer. I mean, she knows Jesus and everything, but she's not one to go to church much. But when she comes here, of course, she's going to church all the time.
Another thing that struck me in your childhood, and of course it's in the news a lot today, is that you did unfortunately cross paths with sexual perverts and predators and things like that, but it sounds like you handled it pretty well and were able to get away from them, from what I read.
Yeah, it's funny because I keep seeing the women that have been sexually harassed and everything, and I don't know if it's a difference between the English and the Americans, but we would just tell them where to go. I mean, not in Jesus' name either. And,
I love your directness, Josie. That's one of the great qualities I like about you. You've always just called a spade, you know.
And perverts are cowards. They really are. I remember this wonderful story this comedian's wife was telling. She got on a train, and a guy jumped in the carriage with her, and he said, I'm going to rape you. And she said, okay, come on, started taking off her clothes, and he ran. He ran. They are cowards.
Mm-hmm. Just like bullies, cowards deep down. They really are. I remember in school confronting them. Bullies that were beating up this little effeminate gay kid, and I, you know, got a few real good punches in, and they one started to break down like he was going to cry, and he wanted to be my friend the rest of the year at school, and someone said, you know, no one ever just stood up to him and clocked him one, you know.
I know. We need to call him. Girls, you need to stand up for yourself.
Yeah, a lot of them are starting to. What was the turning point of you kind of getting in the entertainment world? I saw you in a film, acting in a film, and you had on a white bathing suit. It was the early rock and roll days. Was that before you got involved with the hula hoop or chanting? What was the timeline? Was that what was like your first, was the hula hoop first?
Yeah.
What was your first big entertainment thing?
Well, that was a friend of mine. I used to go to this jazz club that was owned by a guy called Jeff Kruger and his parents. And Jeff was promoting rock acts, and he made a film promoting the rock acts. And he said, Josie, I want you to be in the film. So we went to Butlin's Holiday Camp in Clacton to shoot, and I was a beauty queen contestant. And that was in the 50s.
Mm. And then the hula hoop thing, how did that happen? You end up on the cover of magazines doing the hula hoop.
Yes, that was much later. Mm-hmm. This lady called Kay O'Dwyer, she wanted to be my manager. And for promotion, she said, we're going down to Trafalgar Square. They're doing the hula hoop thing, and there'll be lots of press there. And I said, but I've never done the hula hoop. And she said, well, you can do it. You'll be able to do it. And we get to Trafalgar Square, and it's mainly kids that are doing it. And as all the press, and I came there very glamorous looking, and I put on the hula hoop, and luckily I was able to keep it up. And my picture appeared all over the world. It was in Life magazine, it was in Archie, it was in all the English newspapers, and that's when I got the title Britain's Hula Hoop Queen.
Well, I tell you, I have great memories of that. I remember, that was a simple time when we got a hula hoop. We just thought we were the richest kids in the world to get that hula hoop, and we'd all be out in our yard doing the hula hoop. And by the way, if you want
to
connect with Josie, that's how they know it's the Josie Pollock on Facebook, is the hula hoop pictures on your Facebook profile. Those of you listening, if you want to see Josie on Facebook, go facebook.com/Josie.Pollock. And there is that famous, infamous picture of you with the hula hoop that's been in all the magazines right on your profile.
Right, right. Yeah, that picture's taken me a long way. I even saw some pictures that make for sale on eBay.
That picture for sale?
I saw some pictures of me for sale.
Wow.
I don't know.
Well, before you buy that picture, though, folks, buy her book on Amazon, Backstage Pass to Heaven. And, oh, by the way, there's a film made about your life on Faith Alone. It's on YouTube now, on Faith Alone, the Josie Pollock Story. And the filmmaker, she actually got you to go in a toy store with a hula hoop recently, right?
Well, that was a few years back. That's Noelle Cozell. She did a documentary on me because she thought that my life, she'd come over to my house and seen my pictures with a bunch of celebrities, and she knew about my prison ministry, and she said, you'd be a great subject for a documentary. And I guess Silver Lake Film Festival were putting on one, so we did like 22 hours of shooting, but it came down to a 6-7 minute documentary.
It was great. I loved it. And you all can watch it right there on YouTube. And you can see the...
On Faith Alone.
On Faith Alone.
Which has been my life. I've lived by faith ever since I got saved.
And it's quite a film to watch for those of you out there on YouTube, and you can find it, and you'll see Josie in the prison. You'll see her doing the hula hoop. You'll see you'll see her on Ed Sullivan, some clips of her on Ed Sullivan. It's all there. Now, Channing, that was a pretty big turning point. The great magician, they have his portraits of him in the Magic Castle here in Hollywood. He was the guy known for one of my favorite magic acts, which was the Dove Act. I used to do magic shows myself, so he was a guy that all of us magicians looked up to. And
he's probably the most copied act in the whole of magic.
So you and him, what was your memory of doing the Ed Sullivan show? What was Ed Sullivan like?
I never got to meet Ed Sullivan.
He just introduced you and you went out.
Yes, yeah, just said who we were, and we went on and did it. He never came to say hello or anything like that, which is kind of strange, but I guess that was his personality.
One thing, I know you're human and you're not an angel, but it seemed to me that you seem to have certain ethics or certain, like, even though you were in there were a lot of decadence around you, you never really got pulled too far down. You always seemed to have a sense of ethics about you. I mean, maybe I'm looking through my bias as your friend, but I know a lot of well-known male celebrities would hit on you and you would, decline. Or I think Playboy, you mentioned in your book, wanted you to do a centerfold and you declined. Where did your innate ethics come from before you became a Christian? Was it just, do you think that the Holy Spirit or your inner sense of the still small voice?
I think I had a moral compass, and I think it came from my mother's upbringing. My mother always warned me about things, and frankly, I never wanted to be another notch on somebody's bedpost.
So you had a good self-esteem. I mean, you had a good sense of self-respect.
Yes, yes.
I mean, people have talked, you've called yourself the groupie, you know, the ultimate groupie, and then you became a groupie for Jesus. But I don't know. I don't know if you really were a groupie, because I was a guitar player.
I don't think I would consider you a groupie,
because when I was a guitar player, all the groupie girls are, you know, very forcefully trying to get you in bed or whatever. You weren't that type of person.
No, not at all. I mean, I was pursued by many musicians, and a couple I had romances with, but I certainly wasn't looking to sleep with every musician out there. That was not me at all.
Yeah.
I had to be in love.
Yeah. Well, I really admire that. I think you had I think it was very humbling for some of these guys, like the Tom Joneses of the world, the type of guys that were used to, you know, every woman just, and I think that's probably behind some of these people in Hollywood that we hear about now that were just predators. They think because of their fame or their power that they don't even have to be a gentleman and ask for consent, you know,
we saw that on a very famous clip on the news, and I'm not going to mention names, but you know who I'm talking about. It is about power and
I asked my therapist friend, Dr. Martin Ross. I was waiting to see him. And he had a magazine in the waiting room about Cosby. And I said to him, I said, I can't understand this. I said, of course, I got married at 21, so, my dating experience was very young as a musician. I played the guitar and the girls, you know, like that. I said, but even then, if a woman had too much to drink and was interested in a date, I was like, no way, you can't consent to anything, and I'm not going to do that. But also, even dating, I would ask a girl if I could kiss her. I would literally, that sounds cheesy, but I would ask, may I give you a kiss? But I said, I can't understand someone doing this against consent. I mean, it seems like half the interest is that there's reciprocity and they're interested in you. And that's what Dr. Ross, who's kind of an expert in this field, says. He says, these guys are so sick, it's not about a real relationship or consent. It's about them having total power and dominance over a person.
Well, I have to tell you, I knew Bill Cosby really well. I was booking the Greek Theater, and Harry Belafonte was appearing, and one day he called, and he could hardly speak, and he said, I can't perform tonight. I'm sending Bill Cosby. And I got to know Bill. I used to see him at Hefner's all the time, and he was a perfect gentleman with me. Now, maybe because I have that high self-esteem, and, you know, guys can figure out the vulnerable, and I really feel sorry for the girls that were treated the way he treated them, but then I go, well, what was wrong with me?
It wasn't that you weren't worthy of it, Josie, that's for sure. But I think you're right, though. You know, when it says the devil prowls about around like a roaring lion, it said a lion will look at a herd of animals and they'll see the animal that's walking with a limp or is vulnerable. And, you know, I was just shooting last night and our lead actress was telling me a Bill Cosby horror story, very similar to what we've heard in the news. But I think that, you know, you probably have a reputation at that point that you were, you had a strong sense of yourself. And plus, you were booking the theater, so you weren't under his power, so to speak. You know what I mean? You were someone that was handling the setup at the Greek Theater. Well, let me throw some celebrity names at you that you hung out, and just give me a reaction. It could be a thought, a few words, an anecdote, whatever you want. How about Freddie Mercury? That's one my son Josh loves, Queen. And when he saw that your Polaroid of you hanging out with Freddie Mercury, he was like, oh, my God, was he impressed.
Freddie Mercury, your thoughts are...
Freddie was just the sweetest guy. And, of course, I met him, you know, when I was traveling with Elton John. And when I got saved, I happened to go to a party that John Reed, Elton's manager, was given. And one of Elton's friends, who was extremely flamboyant, I said, I'm going to have a Christian TV show. And he said, can I be the sinner of the week? And then Freddie Mercury said, can I be the sinner of the week too? And there was a lot of cocaine being passed around, and I kept refusing it. And Freddie came up to me and he said, gosh, I really admire your strength that you're able to say no.
Wow.
I was very sad when he died.
Yeah, very sweet man, and what a gift. He's one of those entertainers that had that gift where he could perform for a whole stadium, and not every band or not every singer can really have a stadium of, you know, 50,000 in the palm of their hand like he did.
A wonderful talent. A wonderful talent.
How about John Lennon, your reaction when you think about John Lennon? I know you were close with his girlfriend for a while. I think her name was it May Pang?
I'm still close with May. We mm-hmm. still communicate. We
I think she wrote an endorsement or a quote about your new memoirs that we're talking about. By the way, listeners, it's on Amazon, Backstage Pass to Heaven. And I think May Pang wrote something about your new book.
Yes, she gave me an endorsement.
Yeah. So what's your memories of John Lennon?
Well, John, when he was sober, he was wonderful. And when he wasn't sober, he was a jerk like most people that aren't sober. But
yeah.
We spent great times together. He came up to Caribou Ranch in Colorado when they were recording Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. And one day he wanted to go get some boots that Gus Dutch and the producer had just got. So we went into the town of Boulder. There was a couple of us with him, and he made a remark in his Liverpool accent that you could go off denim in this town because everybody was in jeans. And as we walked along the street, people kept trying to sell us drugs, and nobody recognized him.
Wow.
So when we went into the store, he found the boots. And Gus had put spurs on the back of his boots, and John said, do you think Gus will mind if I copy him and get the spurs? He didn't want to upset him, but he liked the look. And then, you know, we spent time in New York. We went up to his apartment, and Nigel said to him, hey, I'm doing an album. Could you write a song for me? And John said, yeah, maybe. He said, write one like Imagine. He said, if I write one like Imagine, I'm going to keep it for my bloody self.
Yeah. Wow.
But he took me out to the balcony, and he was showing me where he'd seen a UFO. Yeah, he was a lovely guy. And humble. It's surprising, you know, he was humble, and I was friends with Ringo, and I ran into him on a plane. We were going to England. He was in first class. I was not, and he asked the people if I could go up and sit with him, and of course, because it was Ringo, they said yes. So he invited me to a party at his ex-wife's house. It was Christmas time. So my sister and I went. And then George Harrison came in, and he came over to the couch, and he goes, hello, I'm George Harrison. Who are you? I mean, I just love the humility of those guys.
Yeah, that's a really great quality is to... I think the truly great people do remain humble and don't get so full of themselves.
speaking of Beatles, you ended up, when you became a chaplain, you came to the Lord and became a chaplain in L.A. County Jail, you ended up ministering to the fifth Beatle, Billy Preston, the great keyboardist. That's in
exactly.
the film.
Paul has written poems and lyrics, and I gave Billy some of the things I'd written. And I got permission from the watch commander for him to play the piano in the chapel
mm-hmm.
after hours. And he wrote two songs on lyrics that I had given him.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day I came into the jail and the trustee said, I've got good news and bad news. Billy loved your lyrics, but the bad news, they just shipped him off to state. So it took a while for him to record the songs. But it was wonderful because when I did the service, he'd be my worship leader.
Wow.
And
you can't get a better worship leader than that.
Him.
Wow.
The joy
yeah, he's
on
such a great keyboardist.
He played with all the greats,
the Beatles and the Let It Be film. He's up on the roof with them, and he played with Clapton and what inspired you to write the song that Billy put the music to? It's one of my favorites, Father Forgive Them. How were you inspired to write that?
Because of my disillusion with how some of the churches and the preachers were.
Mm-hmm.
I just, you know, when I became, I was always a Christian. I always prayed to Jesus. I just was not walking with it. And
mm-hmm.
until I got born again and filled with the Holy Spirit, I rebelled. I wouldn't read the Bible. But I just went to so many churches, and I just saw a lot of fakeness. And it just bothered me. And you know I'm very outspoken. I don't hide my thoughts. So I put it into my lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
First it talked about the world and how awful the world had become, and then it said, and when you look at the church, does that hurt you too? How the people of God are representing you? You know, and I just told it as it was.
Mm. Well, let's take a listen to that now. This is, ladies and gentlemen, one of the greatest gospel songs, and there's such a strong anointing, a presence of the Holy Spirit on this song that you'll feel it. So just really listen to these words. I have it here, Josie. And
great.
If you want to get a cup of tea or something, we'll be on like a 4-minute break as the song plays, and we'll come back. Here it is.
Bring us to our knees.
Talking about the book, it's on Amazon, Backstage Pass to Heaven. That beautiful song you just heard was Father, Forgive Them, written by my guest Josie Pollock and Billy Preston, who is known as the Fifth Beatle.
Actually,
and
Father,
welcome back,
forgive
Josie.
Us.
Father, Forgive
it's
Us.
Father, Forgive Us. Yes. It sounds like you play it a lot because the quality is not so good.
Yeah. It wasn't the best CD, but hopefully our listeners were able to enjoy that. It's just a beautiful song. One of the things that touched me about Billy, he was in jail, of course, for some bad things he did, was that he, when he was in jail, on the film On Faith Alone, the Josie Pollock story, which can now be seen for free on YouTube. Those of you listening can watch the film about Josie's life there. But Billy said he was in jail. He said the Lord was punishing me for some of the things I did. It was like he humbly had a contrition and accepting his sentence for what he did. And that touched me about him. And I think you saw that goodness in him, even with all the problems that he had, huh?
Right. Well, you know, my whole life in the jail system was bringing love to the unlovable and hope to the hopeless. And even though when I watched the news and saw some of my customers on the news and would judge them, the minute I walked through the bars of the jail, it was like God took over and I could only love them all, no matter how bad they were. I felt love for them.
They were so fortunate to have a chaplain like you with that love, because if they would have had a... I've known situations where the chaplain was more of a fundamentalist type, and he brought further judgment, further shame, further abuse to these men that needed to know in the middle of their disgrace that God had grace for them.
Well, talking about a church with grace, some of the volunteers there, one man said that I was should not be in the jail, I should not be ministering to men, and I probably wasn't even saved because I was so disobedient to God. And I said, you know what? God's got me here. God is using me here, so you take it up with him.
Good for you, Josie. And, you know, that's a true Christian according to Jesus in Matthew 25. He said, when I was in prison, you visited me. And when I was hungry, you fed me. And let me ask you a question. I mean, forgiveness, that's a beautiful song. And is this, did you say it was Father, forgive them or Father, forgive us?
I think I may have used both.
Okay.
But I think the title is Father, Forgive Us.
Okay.
I think I did use both because
okay. If
I'm just saying forgive them, I'm not included.
I see. That makes sense. And, of course, Christ prayed that on the cross for the people killing him. Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. And so that, to me, shows that his love and forgiveness.
Where I got the line.
Yeah, and that shows just such unconditional love and forgiveness. I have a friend of mine who's not a Christian. He's worked on some of my films. And when I shared that story, I said, do you know what Jesus prayed on the cross for the people killing him? And he said, no. I said, he prayed, Father, forgive them. They know not what to do. He forgave them from the cross. And he said to me, wow. He said, I've studied all the world religions. He said, but that is the gold standard. There's no one that forgives on that level. Now, you had a challenge with forgiveness in the jails because you ran into Susan Atkins, one of the Manson murderers who murdered your friend,
yep.
Sharon Tate. And I know you've told the story so many times.
That's my
but,
friend, Jay Sebring.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, Jay Sebring, who was the great hairdresser back in the day in the 60s. That was the guy that all the star actors wanted doing their hair.
Yeah, and
but,
he was the first guy I dated when I broke up with my husband.
Oh, is that right?
So I was, oh. Yes. And, yes, I was ministering at California Institute for Women. And sometimes I would share the story of how I escaped the Manson family. And the chaplain said to me, Josie, don't say anything about the Mansons today because Susan Atkins usually comes to the service. And when I walked out, there was Susan Atkins talking about Jesus, and all this anger rose up in me. And Brad Cashman, who's now a pastor, but he used to do worship for me, he said, why don't you go and confront her? And I didn't feel that I should because of the chaplain. It would be overstepping the mark. And God spoke to me and he said, you minister to people that others have to forgive. Where's your forgiveness?
Wow.
And I'm not sure I ever really forgave her because I didn't go back to that prison until after she died.
These are the tough ones. And yet, you know, that's the way God is, that forgiveness for all. And we have a mutual friend, Philip Miles, who it took him, I think he told me it took him maybe 5-6 years, but he ended up forgiving the guy that shot his wife, a kind of a drive-by gangbanger shooting, and led the guy to the Lord in jail. And we hear those stories. You know, when I hear the headlines
I've got a story about that. There was a young man in the jail that God kept putting on my heart to call him down. And he was kind of in protective custody. And I'd have to go through the watch commander to get him. But I kept bringing him down. I never knew why. Until I saw a story in the paper about the murder. And Lori, the one they killed, Philip's wife, she was a friend too. And I realized that the kid that I was calling down was one of the perpetrators. So I called Philip and I said, I don't know how you're going to feel about this, but I've been ministering to one of the perpetrators. He said, oh, thank God, I've been praying for those young men to find
wow.
the Lord.
Wow, isn't that
and
something
so the next time I called the guy up, I said, you know, Laurie was a friend of mine. Now, he wasn't the shooter, but when you're in a gang and somebody shoots somebody, everybody arrested is treated as if they were the shooter. And he said, you know, I see that family in court and I want to tell them how sorry I am. I said, you want to tell her husband how sorry you are? And he said, I'd love to. So I called Philip on the phone and asked him if he would speak to him. And they spoke. And he told Philip how sorry he was. And Philip forgave him. It was wonderful. It's so amazing how God works. Because I couldn't understand why I kept calling this kid up. But God knew.
Yeah, God's grace is so much wider and bigger than we can conceive. And, you know, Jesus says that we're to love and forgive our enemies. And Jesus would not ask us to do anything he would not do. And so he is so forgiving. And that story with Philip is an example to me of the depths of Christ's forgiveness. And Corrie Ten Boom's another one, how she forgave the Nazis that, you know, raped and...
Yes.
Killed her sister and things like that.
Some
are hard to forgive. When I hear the predators in the news, you know, the Spacey type stories, I have to admit it's very hard for me to, you know.
Well, because you have a son.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and my brother who died of an overdose. Yeah, and I have a daughter. Yeah, right before my brother died, he told me of a. Youth pastor, Bible quoter, quoting Bible toting youth pastor who, you know, abused him sexually, and he had never told me about this until shortly before he died. So, I have a lot of anger about predators, and yet, do you think of like a Spacey or a Weinstein truly repented, truly had contrition, truly worked on their sexual addiction, and truly changed? Of course, Christ would forgive them. Do you think society would ever forgive? Do you think those guys' careers are done, or do you think society, if it was a long time and they really showed they were changed, do you think they would ever be forgiven or accepted back into society? Or do you think some of these guys crossed the line where it's just too far, and people will never want to see their work?
Well, you know, I always looked at Weinstein and thought he looked like a dirty old man, so nothing surprises me. As far as Spacey, I don't think he ever raped anybody. He's like this typical gay celebrity who will try it on, and maybe he'll try it on with six who refuse, but the seventh might give in. So I don't look at him as really being a predator. I feel sorry for the boys that were upset by how he was, but I don't know. It's not for me to judge. Weinstein using his power to rape and pillage, I mean, he's just another story, he's just a person of a different color. I don't see the two of them as the same, and I don't know. I just don't.
So I guess you look at it on a case by case basis.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
Spacey never threatened their careers. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Weinstein did. And from what I understand, he had somebody trying to make stories up about everybody that has come up against him. I mean, he hasn't stopped being a predator.
Mm.
I don't think he has any repentance in him, frankly.
Mm. Well, you've been around a lot of people. And how are you doing? Are you still good to go a few more minutes, Josie? I know we went a little longer than we normally do.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, I'm okay. I've had my breakfast.
Okay. Yeah, I'll confess, I was eating a little bit of cereal here while we were talking with my coffee.
Oh, shame on you.
one of the people that I've always loved, who inspired me with music, was Liberace. My parents, knew him before he was well known. When he had a weird, I think, was it a Polish name, Waslu, his actual name. It's hard to say. It's hard to say. But I remember he was so good. He played with so much expression. And so as a little boy and kind of a musician performing at a young age myself, started to perform at 7 years old, I was looking for, heroes that could really play. And so my mother said, you've got to see this pianist. He's fantastic. And we see him. And, of course, as you know, nicest man in the world to everyone who meets him. But you toured and were his opening act, and you were very good friends with Liberace. What's your memories of him?
I just love Liberace. He was the sweetest, kindest, generous person. So much fun. And if he was in a bad mood, you never saw him. I mean, if we just hung out all the time, we'd get into a town, we'd get the Yellow Pages, we'd find an antique store, and, sorry.
You have someone at the door.
Yes, someone at the door.
Well, let me play a little bit more of your song. We'll just come, why don't you get that, and we'll come back in just 1 minute, and that'll give me a chance to take some questions that are coming in. So
okay.
We'll be right back with you, Josie, in 1 minute.
Okay.
Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live. And Josie, are you back with us?
I am, yes.
Okay, did you take care of your person there?
I did. Getting back to Liberace.
Back to Liberace.
We'd get to the hotel, we'd find the Yellow Pages, find the antique shops. We'd go antiquing all day until dinner time. Then we'd find the best restaurant in town and have dinner, and then we'd do the show. And often the best restaurant in town was the only restaurant. So all the people going to the show would eat there. So poor Lee, he's trying to eat his food, and people kept coming over for an autograph. But he was so lovely and so sweet to people.
And Lee was what his friends called him.
Yes.
Yeah. By the way, you probably know this, so I'm sure you've heard it, but as you know, I grew up in Pittsburgh and as a Catholic boy, and we had a lot of Catholic hospitals there that the church had, and Liberace was there and was very, very sick, and it was at the hospital, actually, they had a mental health ward.
No, he almost died from?
Yeah, that's where he almost died. My dad was actually in the mental health ward of the same hospital. But Liberace saw this shimmering. Yeah, and he thought he was an angel. It looked like a nun in white, but I think he said he wasn't sure if it was a nun. He felt it could have been an angel, like where Hebrews says in Hebrews 13 that sometimes people that come to help us are angels unawares. And he had a miraculous recovery there, and he actually donated a lot of money to build another wing to the hospital there.
Mm. Do you know what he was sick from? chemicals in the cleaning. He had all this cleaning in the wardrobe of his hotel room, and the chemicals got him so sick he almost died.
Oh, is that right? Wow. Yeah, I remember he was playing at a place there in Pittsburgh that we used to play. I think it was the Holiday House. I don't know if it's even there anymore. That was quite a story. Well, while you were getting your door, we had some questions come in. The first one, Victoria in Connecticut, she said, I read that you barely missed the killings, Sharon Tate and the Manson. Could you tell us about that? But also a follow-up question she has is, she said, it says in some of the articles that God spared Josie by a migraine headache. And this person writes, it seems unfair if God spared you with a headache because of the call in your life, why would he not spare those other people? So I guess there's two parts. If you could tell your story about missing the Manson thing, but also your thoughts on why didn't God spare the other people? And that's one of those tough questions, Josie. It's like the shooting in Texas. I asked the question, okay, everyone says pray for Texas. Well, these people were praying in church. Why did God, you know, these dear little children in church praying, why didn't God protect them? But we see
I don't always understand God. And God doesn't always do what I would like him to do. But the Bible says his ways are so much higher than ours. And so it's not for me to judge God. I do get angry at God sometimes, but he knows best. So, you know, I'm just a mere mortal that doesn't really know what his thoughts are and how much higher they are than mine. I don't understand things. The thing in Texas, I don't understand that. But God gave man free will. So therefore, you know, men can be as evil because God has given them free will. I think he made a mistake doing that, but it's not for me to judge God. Anyway, as far as my thing, I had been friends with Sharon, and I ran into her on a Tuesday night in a club, and she said, when are you coming over to the house? I said, you know, I'm working day and night at the Greek Theater. She said, well, try and find some time over the weekend. Roman's still in England, and I'll probably be alone. So as I'm talking to her, I'm on the phone to my roommate. Now, in those days, there was no cell phones, but this club had a phone box in the middle of it. So I said to my roommate, write down this number, which was Sharon's new number. So on the Thursday night, I flew to Vegas with my boss to see Anthony Newley. I wanted to put him in the theater. And while I was there, I got this terrible migraine. And my old roommates from England live in Vegas, and they said to my boss, forget about Josie going back tonight. She's too sick. Let her stay over. So he flew back. I went to bed at their place. The next day, they booked me a flight that was late afternoon, early evening. I get back to my place, and I think, oh, it'd be a good time to go visit Sharon. I look everywhere for the phone number. My roommate has left town, and I can't find it. And then Judy Kahn calls me with tickets to a theater. So I go there, and I think I'll drive over the next day. Well, as I'm getting ready to drive over, it came on the news about all these bodies that were found in a house, and it was Sharon's. So that's how God protected me. Why he doesn't protect everybody, I can't answer that. I have no idea.
Yeah, and you know, as followers of Christ, we see in Jesus that he suffered on the cross and died, and a lot of the people in the Bible and the early Christians were martyrs. In fact, the book of Revelation was written to try to encourage these Christians as they're being fed to the lions and all this terrible stuff's going on. So faith does not guarantee, although some televangelists might say faith guarantees you never have any problems, and
every day is Disneyland, but it really doesn't guarantee.
It tells us that we will suffer as he has suffered. Mm-hmm. It doesn't tell us that everything's going to be easy.
Yeah,
and,
that's right, yeah.
And I know Christians that are struggling all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Why? And then I see evil people being blessed. Why? Mm-hmm. But then it talks about that in Proverbs, don't envy the wicked.
Yeah.
Because
Jesus,
their day of judgment will come.
Exactly. Yeah, Psalm 73 talks about that too, when David says, why are all these wicked people prospering? You know, I had people tell me about, you know, Spacey's unwanted, you know, groping these younger men and everything. So I knew about what he was doing. That goes back to like 98. I was in a play, and one of the actors in the play had been at a party and told me that. So I knew about some of the things going on with these guys for years, and I wondered, why do they keep prospering? But at the end of Psalm 73, it says, you don't see the end. You don't see, as I do, the big picture. And who would want to end up like Spacey and Weinstein now? You know?
Yeah, I saw Kevin Spacey at the theater with an absolutely beautiful boy. I was quite jealous.
And, you know, Jesus says that there will be some problems and suffering in this world. In John 16:33, one of my favorite verses, Jesus said, I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have suffering and trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. So that's, he is with us. Another question that came in while you were getting the door, this is a tough one. He says, Richard and Josie, I want you to answer this. Stephen from New Mexico. You've been talking about Kevin Spacey and the young boys and things like this. Hasn't Hollywood always been this way? The Liberace, who you both met or knew and liked, in the Scott Thorson says he was a minor, and Liberace took him in the same way.
That film just made me so angry.
I remember
Liberace,
you hated, you were very upset, but you felt they really misrepresented Liberace in that film, didn't you?
Oh, totally. He was not a predator at all. Scott Thorson was just making himself look good and Lee look bad, and I hated that film. And Jerry Weintraub was the producer, and I told him I wanted to be a consultant because I probably knew Lee as well as anybody except his family and his boyfriend. And I could have been a consultant on that. I would never have okayed the way they showed him to be.
Mm.
I mean, Scott Thorson was a user.
Mm-hmm.
He was not a victim.
Yeah, and, you know, he's in jail now, Scott, for I think like 20 years or something now.
What did he do?
Well, there was all kind of stuff. The addiction, and of course he blames that on Liberace. He said Liberace got him on drugs. Cause if
Liberace was not a drug addict.
Yeah, and
at all.
Yeah, he. I guess there was some identity theft, I believe. And burglary.
He was not a good guy. He was a user.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's, I think, got, he was sentenced to 8 to 20 years in prison. There was jail, identity theft, and a lot of this was also related to testing positive for meth. But basically, he was using credit cards. He was using credit cards, and then they found out he had, you know, taken a lot of other people's credit cards. And so he has cancer, so he's in cancer in prison now and not doing very well. But
well, I'm sorry for that, but that's what happened to Susan Atkins too. She died of cancer.
That is some interesting questions there. Well, Josie, I know we've kept you an hour now, so I guess we'll let you go. As much as we could talk about this on and on, we could probably do a 6-part series or something. Your life, we barely scratched the surface. So I hope you all get this book, Backstage Pass to Heaven, Josie Pollack. It's on Amazon, and I want to encourage you all to get this book. The story of jet setter Josie Pollack. She went from hanging out with the rich and famous to ministering to the notorious. Gee, we didn't even get into Menendez, ministering to the Menendez in jail. Do you think, I know we're out of time, but do you think Menendez, do you think it's true they were abused and that was part of the story? I guess we don't, you know, we weren't there, we don't know for sure, but they say that part of this was they were abused and that was what was
that? I believe that.
You believe it, yeah.
I mean, I didn't know Lyle, I only knew Eric. I had a very close relationship with Eric while he was locked up.
Mm-hmm.
And I prayed with him that he wouldn't get the death sentence. I had hoped he would be with his brother when they got incarcerated, but it didn't happen. But it just makes me sad, and I really hope they get a new trial.
Yeah.
That's what
Eric's
I hope
the one
for.
That you knew then.
Yes, the younger one.
Yeah. That was quite a story. You know, they have a new show dramatizing it.
Oh, I've been watching it.
Yeah. What do you think of it?
I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, it seems pretty well done. Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing that annoyed me was they had a priest ministering to him through the bars, and I was the one ministering to him, not the priest. Although he might have had a priest before I met him, I don't know.
Yeah, we could have got a good British actress to play you, and I don't know, who would be a good British actress we could have got to play you in a TV movie?
I actually could have played it myself, Richard.
You could have. That's true. You're a British actress. Yeah, we don't need to go looking for Helen Mirren when we got you. Helen Mirren wanted to play you, but then they made it a male priest. And Judy Dench, they were all wanting to play Josie Pollock, but then they got a priest, for God's sake. Well, it's been great talking with you, Josie. I'm so proud of you. So proud of you.
Thanks, Richard. Thanks for all your help. God bless you and Sherry and your kids. And I'll see you soon.
Yeah, we will see you soon. And I love your song so much, I'm going to have to play it to close out the show again.
Great.
And it was great talking with you. God bless you, Josie.
You too.
And here it is, Father Forgive Them, written by Josie Pollock, also and sometimes titled Father Forgive Us, Billy Preston. Singing, written by Josie and Billy Preston.
Love and compassion.